Hello and welcome to the newest episode of the Inspired Souls podcast. Today I am joined by Deb Morgan, who is a real relationships expert, a speaker, a podcast, a coach and author who knows a thing or two about wrong relationships and also knows what it takes to create strong and healthy, robust relationships. Deb has created a coaching practice, not a rehearsal, as a reminder that life really isn't a rehearsal and whatever you want to achieve is possible. Hi Deb, big welcome to you. How are you?
Hi Helen, thank you. I'm very well, thank you.
Brilliant stuff. It's great to have you here today. So it sounds absolutely fascinating what you do and absolutely resonates with me about being able to achieve anything that you want to do in life. So tell me about your journey, your story. How did you get into this work?
Well, not by a direct route, that's for sure. It was quite a circuitous route, and maybe not a route most people would think of. I have a personal background of abusive relationships. Mm-hmm. My first marriage was physically and sexually abusive. In fact, I was beaten up for the first time on my wedding night, which was a bit of a shock, to say the least.
Wow.
Then my second marriage was psychologically abusive, what they now call coercive control. And I ended up in a stage where I was scared of my own shadow. It really chipped away at my confidence, my self-esteem, my self-worth. And at that time, I was married to my second husband. I had my own successful business. Yeah. What I didn't know until afterwards is that he had sabotaged it from within because he felt emasculated by my success.
Right.
So whilst I was wondering what on earth was going wrong with the business, because of everything that I had done to create the success, I was continuing to do, because, you know, if it ain't broke, you don't fix it.
Yeah.
And I couldn't understand why the things I'd been doing previously were no longer working and changing things. But unfortunately, that business became insolvent on New Year's Eve 2008. But it was after that I discovered that, as I say, he had been sabotaging the business from within. As a result of that, my marriage collapsed. I lost the business. I went through personal bankruptcy and I lost residency of my son. My son was only 3 years old at the time. And I knew I couldn't stay in the marriage. I couldn't stay in the home because it wasn't healthy for me. And when my son came up to me one day and said, "Mummy, please don't cry. I'll look after you. Everything will be all right." I realized that that wasn't a good thing for a three-year-old to say.
No.
And it wasn't right for me to stay in the relationship if that's what he was beginning to think about relationships. So knowing that he was settled where we were living at the time, I left him with his dad because I didn't know where I was going to go. And I wasn't prepared to drag a three-year-old around friends' floors, sofas, spare rooms, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
So I left saying, "I'll be back to get him once I've got myself sorted." So fast forward, I got myself sorted, managed to get myself a nice little flat within about 6 months, went back to get my son. And I had been seeing him every weekend up until that point anyway. So it's not as if I just left and then suddenly came back.
Yeah.
And I went back and I said, "Right, I'm sorted now. I'm going to take him to live with me." And my husband said to me, "He's going to live with you over my dead body."
Right.
And that started a 10-year legal battle to become my son's primary carer. Because in the eyes of the law, I had voluntarily given up my right to be his primary carer, which was about as far from reality as it was possible to get. But that's how the law saw it.
Oh.
And his father had managed to tell anybody who would listen that I had abandoned them when he was just 3 years old. I disappeared to another county and had had no contact with them whatsoever, yet I was seeing my son all of the time. So my ex-husband was very much in victim mode and making me out to be the bad guy, which, you know, is fine, absolutely fine. I've got no qualms about that and no worries about it. But that took me really by surprise that I couldn't be a mum to my son. And for some context there, my son was my sixth pregnancy. He was the only one I carried to term.
Right.
And my ex-husband knew this. He'd already had three other children.
Okay.
And he knew that it was a struggle for me to carry to term. Long story short, I was since diagnosed with endometriosis, had that dealt with. But that was the reason why I was having difficulties conceiving and difficulties carrying to term. So that was a double-edged blow for me. He knew the way to hurt me was to take away the one thing I desperately wanted, and that was to be a mum.
Yeah.
So I left that marriage. I managed to get a number of jobs, but I was made redundant from each of the three jobs I got immediately after. Mm-hmm. So this was all within an 18-month period of my business going through, my marriage ending and everything else.
So traumatic.
And by the time I was made redundant from the third job, we were looking at, it was around November 2010. And I desperately wanted to buy my son a Christmas present, because all of his Christmas presents up until that point, birthday presents, Christmas presents, I had been getting in charity shops. I'd been using FreeCycle or Buy, Sell and Swap on Facebook. And I just wanted to buy him something that was new, absolutely brand new, out of the box for him. And I couldn't do it. So I planned to take my own life. I just felt like I was complete and utter failure. I'd failed at business. I failed at marriage. I'd failed as a mum. As far as I was concerned, I'd failed as a human being. I was worthless. And with two previous husbands who told me nobody else would have me, and, you know, who did I think I was? All of those sorts of messages going around my head. I thought the best thing I could do for everybody was to not no longer be here. So I gathered together the various accoutrements I wanted and sat down at my desk, having drunk the best part of a bottle of wine, because I was self-medicating quite heavily at that point on Chardonnay at the time. Can't stand this stuff anymore. but medicating quite heavily.
Yeah.
And I pushed the pills out of their blister packs, put them into neat little piles in front of me, grabbed the bottle of vodka that I bought for the purpose, picked up the first pile of pills, picked up the bottle of vodka, tipped them into my mouth. And as I tilted my head back, I saw a photograph of my son on my bookcase.
Oh, yeah.
And I knew at that point I couldn't allow him to get to the age of 14, 15 and believe that mummy killed herself because she didn't love him and didn't want him, which was the messaging that his father was giving him at that point. So I knew I had to do something. Didn't quite know what. But cleared everything away. I'd messaged a friend of mine, and we'd been having a jokey conversation a week or so previously, and I asked for the name of a website, which she sent through to me. And within 24 hours, I had created a personal profile. I'd created my own business, if you like, and I entered the sex industry as an independent escort.
Yeah.
And I had my first client within 24 hours of creating that profile. So it's not the ideal career path for somebody, I guess, wanting to go into coaching and being a relationships expert. But it was the turning point for me, because what happened was I started to meet men through that work, through that line of work, who were prepared to pay what I was asking. So I learned lots of business lessons from it. I learned how to market myself, how to set my price and stick to it, how to ask for the money up front, how to set my boundaries, all of those sorts of things, which you know you need to do in business, but maybe you don't do. So many of us don't like to ask for the sale and those sorts of things. Whereas I knew I had to do it. So I kind of became a bit of a caricature of the person I perceive my best self to be. because for me, this was going to be an Oscar-winning performance. I'd been going out anyway. I'd been having one-night stands, you know, wanting somebody to love me. So it really, for as far as I was concerned, I was safer because A, I wasn't drinking.
Yeah.
B, I knew who I was meeting. I had contact numbers for them. Other people knew I was meeting them because there was a very good buddy system and security system in place when you're in that sort of network of people. So I was actually safer than if I was meeting people in the pub and having a one-night stand with them.
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah.
So what happened was the clients I was meeting started with treating me with respect and actually valuing me and not questioning my boundaries. And something slowly started to change inside of me, and I thought, hold on a minute, decent men do exist. Now, whatever you think about the sex industry, whatever you think about the people that use the sex industry, we need to remember that it is larger, it's a more powerful industry than Hollywood. It's the largest industry in the world, significantly more economically powerful than Hollywood as well. And that's just what you can track. What you can't track is, of course, all of the cash transactions that take place within that industry. And this isn't the time or place for that conversation. But I realized that I was providing a service. So I was just in a service industry. It's just the service I was offering was slightly different to most other people.
Yeah.
I also recognized that it wasn't about the sex. It was actually about the communication and the companionship. Yeah. Although, yes, you know, sex is part and parcel of your time with the client. It wasn't the be all and the end all. In an hour long session, the sex perhaps only lasted no more than 10 minutes. What they wanted was the connectivity and the conversation. And so within my time in the industry, I started asking lots of questions. I wanted to know, why did people use the sex industry? What was happening within their relationship? Because the majority of my clients were married and they didn't want to have an affair because to their mind, that was cheating. Making it a business transaction wasn't cheating. So, you know, there are lots of lots of questions around that for me as well. And from there, I studied for a psychology degree with the Open University because I had so many unanswered questions. And that then led me down the route that I'm now down, because I came out of the sex industry in a classic Pretty Woman moment, fell in love with one of my clients, but he was going to become my third abusive relationship. But he was economically abusive. So whilst he absolutely adored me, put me on a pedestal, he managed every last penny that I had. Excuse me. So he would give me an allowance every month, which sounds wonderful. And to a degree, it was wonderful because I could spend it on anything I wanted to spend it on. But I had to account for every single penny I was spending. Didn't matter what it went on, but I had to account for it, which meant I couldn't start to save for rental on a new flat. Because I had to account for it. And he thought he was helping me because he said, well, you've been bankrupt. Let me manage the money. You don't have to worry about it, was how it was phrased. So that was fine. But I knew very early on that this relationship wasn't right for me. It was very suffocating. I couldn't do anything on my own. The hobbies I had, he had to come with me. He started taking up the same hobbies, coming with me if I was meeting up with friends. Well, I'll come with you. You don't need to come with me. I'll come with you. Don't you want me to come with you? Does that mean you don't love me? So it became very conditional, very suffocating. So I knew it was, sorry.
I was going to say that would be really uncomfortable.
So I knew it wasn't right, but couldn't get out of it. And it all came to a head one day when I started to follow my dreams. And my lifelong dream had always been to be a professional actor. So I figured I had nothing else to lose. I was going to go and see if I could pursue my dream. I was in a relationship where I was getting an allowance every month. We were fortunate that I didn't have to work because he was earning a significant salary. So I thought, well, I can't just sit around at home, started to pursue my dreams. And when I started to put myself first, that's when my life started to change. And it was in pursuing those dreams and being cast in a touring production of a play that I met the love of my life. And we'd actually met 15 years prior, dated briefly, and it hadn't worked because we'd ended up going to opposite ends of the country and long distance relationship before the days of mobile phones. It was quite difficult. Didn't happen, but there was no big fallout. And funnily enough, he recognized my face on a poster in one of the theatres that we were due to perform in, tracked me down on Facebook, and we were just catching up, you know, how's the family, what have you been up to, because he didn't know if I was married. I certainly didn't know what was going on in his life, so there was no romance there at all. It was just a catch up. But my partner, who I'd been with at the, who I was with at the time, what I didn't realize is that he was checking my phone, my social media and everything else, and saw this exchange of messages and went ballistic, wanted to know who it was. And on one day, he locked me out of the house in my pajamas, but my son was inside, and my son was about 6 years old at the time. My son was inside. I was outside in my pajamas, and he wasn't going to let me back in. Well, any mum, being separated from her son when tensions are high is going to go ballistic.
Absolutely, yes.
When you've been separated from your son because your ex-husband won't let you see him, and then your partner won't let you see him, I stood in the street and I screamed at the top of my lungs.
Yeah.
And he can't stop screaming. Everybody's looking at us. You're causing an embarrassment. If you don't let me back in to see my son, I will continue to scream until somebody calls the police. At which point I was bundled, manhandled back into the house and locked into my son's bedroom with my son. Thankfully, I had my mobile phone in my pocket.
Yeah.
And I have no idea who I can contact. I certainly didn't want to contact my son's father because he was just, well, what do you expect? And that would have been a nail in the coffin of me seeing my son anymore. I didn't want to contact my parents because they were elderly. And I thought, I don't know anyone else who can help me. And so I contacted the love of my life, who happened to be a social worker, because in my mind, I knew he would have been used to dealing with similar situations.
Yeah.
And I thought, it doesn't matter. If this makes him never want to see me again, I don't care. Right now, I've got to get my son out of this situation and I don't know how to do it. Yeah. So I phoned him and he said, I will be with you within 2 hours, because he was living quite a distance away. And in fairness, he turned up, he knocked on the door, said to my partner, I know you want to punch me, but right now we've got to get this little boy safely to his grandparents. Once I've taken him and Deb to his grandparents, then I'll come back and then you can punch me. Thankfully, that punching never happened, which I'm glad about, because I'm now with the love of my life. We have been together for 8 years this year, and he was a former Royal Marine. So I didn't fancy the chances of my partner at the time had there been fisticuffs. So that was quite good. And that all got sorted out. So it was a very difficult coming together of the love of my life and me when we did eventually get together. And we had to make it work. Obviously, he learned my entire background, what I had been through, and he just didn't judge me. There was no judgment at all. And for the first 2 years of our relationship, I did everything I could to try and get a reaction out of him, because all of my other relationships had been conditional.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what it was to be loved unconditionally. And it was a really scary place to be. But he was supportive of me studying for my psychology degree. He was supportive of me going out and creating a new circle of friends. He was supportive of me doing whatever I needed to do to look after my son. And he was supportive of me ploughing every last penny I had into my court battle so that I could become mum to my son. And it got to a stage where he said, look, you can throw whatever you like at me, Deb, metaphorically. I'm not a literal thrower. He said, you can throw whatever you like at me, but I'm not going anywhere. If anybody breaks this relationship, it's going to be you.
Amazing.
And talk about take the wind out of my sails. Yeah. Oh, okay. I guess I've just got to let you love me then.
Yeah.
But it was such a hard lesson to learn.
Yeah.
So learning that lesson, doing my psychology degree, and then knowing that I also wanted to study NLP, hypnotherapy and timeline therapy, because they are tools that I'd had used on me at one point in the past, very unethically. But as I learned more about them through psychology, because I found they had their roots in psychology, then I was more open to them. Yeah. I decided I wanted to study them myself so that I could help my clients more. And it took a while for me to sort of become the relationships expert that I am, because I dabbled with generic life coaching for a while. And it was only working with two coaches at the time, one a business coach and one a personal coach. And they both said to me, Deb, why are you doing all this life coaching stuff? Why aren't you doing relationships?
Yeah.
Because that's what you know.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, for goodness sake, you know, who's going to want to talk about relationships from somebody that used to be a sex worker? But then realized that that gave me a really unique insight into the male psyche, which I was able to use to help my clients. And that enabled me to specialize sort of down that route with psychology. And when you put it all together with my lived experiences, together with the theoretical knowledge that I've got, it created this really powerful program that I'd been able to write through science and my own experience. So that's how I do what I do now. And, you know, it's a very long answer to the question you asked, but that is the route that got me to where I am.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely fascinating hearing your story. Wow, what an amazing woman you are to have been through so, so much and now bringing it all together to help other people moving forward. Do you work with men and women or with couples, or how do you work?
I work with all. Interestingly, I find men find me a bit intimidating.
Okay.
They fall into two camps. I do work with men, but quite often, oh no, you know, she's been a sex worker. So you either get the camp who will want to try it on.
Okay.
Which I'm very, very adept at dealing with those. And then you get the other camp, like, oh my goodness, she's a sex worker. That's a bit scary. Or I'm not a sex worker. She was a sex worker. That's scary. Yep. You know, and it's one of those, it's just something I did. It doesn't make me an expert at sex, for goodness. You know, I look back now and I think, oh my word, you know, really? It wasn't that exciting. But what it did teach me was about communication and about not judging people and how everybody is different and how what goes on in one person's bedroom is not the same as what goes on in the next person's bedroom.
Mm.
And it's about having those open conversations around it, because as a society, we are conditioned to believe that sex is naughty and it's bad unless it's for procreation.
Yeah.
Because we are very quick to congratulate people when we find out that they're expecting children.
Sure.
But if somebody came up to you and said, oh, yeah, we had the most amazing sex on Friday night. Like, oh, okay. No, thanks. I don't want to hear about that.
Yeah.
How did you end up pregnant?
Yeah. Yeah. True.
Yeah. So it was about opening those conversations. So I'm very open to having those conversations with my clients.
Yeah.
And the men I do work with appreciate that. Not that all the conversations are around sex. Invariably what happens, if I'm approached by a man, it is because there's a problem in our sex life. It's causing an issue in our relationship. It's got to be our sex life.
Right.
It's very rarely the sex life. Now, there are medical issues for your sex life dwindling, you know, things like the menopause in women, and even men, you know, they go through changes at that stage in life as well, issues with their prostate and all those sorts of things. So it does impact your sex life. At 50, we're not going to be having the same sort of sex we had at 20. You know, we might be having fantastic sex, but it's going to be different.
Yeah.
Because just age and everything else that comes into account. And if you've had children as well, you know, children are around. It doesn't always happen as spontaneously as it might have once. So it's about having those conversations, but understanding what's underlying that. And invariably, it's the communication and the connectivity that's missing.
Yeah.
When you bring that connectivity back, the sex life improves. But if you've been in a relationship for a long time, what happens is we take each other for granted.
Mm.
We get used to the fact that, I don't know, every night at 7:30, you sit and watch EastEnders together.
Mm.
That's hardly conducive to a loving relationship. So it's about finding the little things you can do to create that connectivity, to create those moments of intimacy. And by intimacy, I don't mean touching. I don't mean sex. I just mean being present together.
Mm.
And then you build up to improving your sex life again. But I work with female clients on the same basis. They'll very often come and say, I've got issues. There's issues in our relationship. We're arguing all the time. I don't know what to do. A lot of the time, it's an older woman, usually over 40, whose confidence has gone down.
Mm.
You've spent a number of years perhaps raising children, a number of years taking a back step whilst your husband or partner's career has improved. But you going back into the workplace and you're starting at a much lower level. It impacts our confidence as women. Much as we wouldn't want to give up raising our children, it does impact on our confidence. And then as we get to sort of 40, 50, we become invisible by society. So that has another impact.
Yeah.
And of course, these are the times where our husbands and partners are off into the workplace and you think, oh, they're meeting up with all these pretty young things.
Mm.
And we worry about the fact that they're going through a midlife crisis and they're going to meet someone who's prettier than I am, taller than I am, slimmer than I am, more interesting than I am.
Of course, yeah.
So I work with women about helping them to understand what they're going through, because when they can work on themselves, they become more interesting to their husband and partner. They become more interested in their husband and partner. And they actually, when you start to work on yourself and put yourself first, every single client I've worked with, female client I've worked with, their husband or partner has noticed the change in them, has commented on the positive change in them, and has suddenly become more attracted to them again.
Yes.
Because they are putting themselves first. And, you know, it's not an overnight fix. It's something we work on usually over 3 months. But working with my female clients, that's what we work on. And when I work with couples, I'll very often work with the couples as individuals initially before bringing them back together, because it's really important to hear the absolute truth from both parties separately. Because when you're sat there with your partner, no matter how close you are, you edit. We all edit.
Yeah.
When your partner's not there, you speak openly and honestly. Because when they're there, we don't want to hurt their feelings.
Yeah.
We don't want to say something that might upset them or offend them, or they might bring up again in the future. So by working with both parties of the couple separately to start with, I get the full story. Then I can help them to work through it, then bring them together to work through it together. Because usually the issue is the same. They're just looking at it from different angles. It's the classic, I guess, men are from Mars, women are from Venus.
Yep.
I remember reading that donkeys years ago when it came out. So it is the same thing. We are all invariably, and I say invariably, the majority of time, we are all looking for the same goal, the same answers. Mm-hmm. We're just going at it from different angles. That is the issue. And it's just pulling that apart, you know, helping to make the route clearer.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, completely. And thank goodness you're there to help people do it. And you've been through what you've been through to get here. It's just absolutely amazing. So can I just ask about your book?
You can.
You've got a book, haven't you?
I've got two, actually. It started as one. And then my publisher said, you've got two books here. I'm not publishing one. I'm publishing them as two.
Okay.
I said, oh, okay. So I had to write a conclusion to the one book and an opening, an introduction to the second book to split them in. But the first one is called Whatever It Takes, Living with, Leaving and Surviving Psychological Abuse. And that was my story of my second marriage, because that was the one that had the most impact, actually. Mm-hmm. The first marriage, as I say, had been physically and sexually abusive. And whilst I carried physical scars from that, over time, the mental scars disappeared. But the damage done to me through psychological abuse was extensive, mm-hmm. and it's taken a lot of years and a lot of work to deal with that.
Yeah.
And there are still times where certain things will still trigger me, although I'm very aware of them now, so I've done so much work on it. But it has a far deeper impact. So that's my story, if you like, of what happened in that marriage and how I got out of it.
Yeah.
And then the second book is called Create Your Blockbuster Life: How to Step Out of the Wings into Your Spotlight.
Love
which that. Is a nod to my drama background. Yeah. But you know, we keep ourselves hidden in the shadows of the wings. And when we bring ourselves out into the spotlight, it's incredible what happens. We do create blockbuster lives, and your blockbuster life will be very different to my idea of a blockbuster life, and will be very different to the next person's.
Yeah.
But this is the book where I share aspects of my story, and I share the how I got from being in that situation where I was suicidal, being in a situation where there was a period of time where I spent 3 weeks living on my kitchen floor, curled up in the fetal position, because I was too scared to go out of the front door. I wouldn't go anywhere where I thought somebody could see me in through the window. So my mental health took an absolute battering.
Yeah.
And this gives you the how-to, the processes I used to get me off that kitchen floor and back out into the world, back out into my spotlight. Yeah. They're both really the story of how I got from there to here, and with some coaching tips thrown into the second one as well.
Oh, that sounds amazing. Whereabouts can we find the books? Are they on Amazon?
They are on Amazon, but you'll also find them on my website in my shop. So if you go to notarehearsal.co.uk/shop, and rehearsal is spelt the British way, rehearsal. So that's notarehearsal.co.uk/shop.
Love that. Thank you so much. I will be putting all of your links and details in the comments box underneath the podcast as well. So thanks.
Thanks, Helen.
Thank you so much for sharing all of that. You are extremely inspiring. I'm going to read your book about getting the blockbuster life. I was just thinking then, what does my blockbuster life look like? I need to give that some thought, but absolutely amazing. But before we go, do you have any words of wisdom for the Inspired Souls podcast audience today?
Yes, I do. And I'm sure lots of people will have heard this time and time again, or time before, but it would be always trust your gut instinct. Because when I look back across the experiences I've had, the worst things happened to me when I ignored my gut instinct. In terms of walking down the aisle to marry my first husband, I walked down the aisle thinking, what am I doing here?
Yeah.
But I went through with it because I didn't want to show my dad up in front of everybody in the church.
Yeah.
My second husband, we actually split up before we got married, before we got engaged. And I allowed him to talk me back into getting engaged and getting married. Whereas my gut was saying to me, you don't really want this. But at the time I was approaching 30. I thought, but I really want children and I should be married by now. You know, we all set these goals on ourselves. And at various other times, I knew the relationship when I came out of the sex industry. I knew that was wrong, but that was my way out of the industry at that time. Yeah, I thought it was my only route out. Hindsight's a marvelous tool. But again, I ignored my gut instinct. Certain times over the years where I took some business decisions and ignored my gut instinct. And I know if I had gone with my gut, things could have been very, very different. However, I don't regret any of it because it got me to where I am today. But I wouldn't want any of your listeners to have to go through the same route just to create their own blockbuster life. So listen to your gut instinct.
Yeah, that's a great piece of advice. Thank you so much, Deb. Thank you for being an amazing guest and for sharing your story with us today. And thank you to all of the listeners who have joined us today. We'll be back again soon.
Thanks, Helen.
Thank you.